This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks podcast. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And my co-host and one of my favourite compatriots.
Comrades in arms
on this podcast is Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. How are you doing today, Pete?
Yeah, not bad, mate. It is toasty in Windsor. We're recording this on, what is it, Wednesday night, the 20th of May. And my goodness, it's been a toasty day. I mean, I love the warm weather, but this was like a little bit too much.
It's been lovely, mate. Unfortunately, I've not had much time in the garden today. I've been in and out of seminars.
Yeah, you were telling me you've had a stressy day.
Yeah, in and out of seminars and forums and then a stressy day on other matters. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
So, Pete, obviously, we've got to talk about the main topic that everyone's talking about, which is COVID-19, coronavirus. I've not caught up today with what's been going on regarding that sphere. Would you be kind enough to just tell our listeners what's been going on? But first, I want to say, ladies, gents, wherever you are in the world, thank you ever so much for listening to Podcast 22. Thank you ever so much for your feedback, comments that you've given us. And thank you also for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe to the podcast, whether it be on iTunes, Audio Boom or SoundCloud, because the numbers are going up, the quality is going up. What we've got for you going forward is going to be absolutely phenomenal. Pete and I are going to keep innovating this podcast. We're trying to keep you entertained, but also educated in what we are seeing. And hopefully it enables you, ladies and gents, to become better traders and investors regarding stocks, shares, funds, whatever it is that you want to do. So that's what we're here for. Pete, over to you, mate.
Yeah, no. I mean, I confirm that. I mean, thank you to everyone for the feedback we've had from the last one. It's been absolutely wicked. And just pointing out with the subscription thing, it's free. So you just, you know, press the button. And it then shows whenever a new show turns up, you get told about it and stuff like that. So anyway. I mean, before we started recording this, I watched a bit of the daily briefing. I mean, that is getting to be a real sleep fest. I mean, it's so painful. I don't know. Did you watch that Charlie Brooker's virus wipe or whatever it was called?
No, Pete. No, I did not.
Oh, it was on the other day. It's been on a couple of times. It was BBC Two. Charlie Brooker, he does this like TV wipe thing occasionally, and he has Philomena Kunk on it and stuff like that. It is hilarious. And they were like doing a takeoff of the daily briefings. It's like a sort of, they're calling it a quiz show. They said every day we have this quiz show, and they get these like people who come on and they answer questions they don't seem to know what they're talking about. And it just, anyway, you have to watch it. It's pretty obvious that the main bit of news is that the number of new infections is going down. The R number is obviously below one. I couldn't actually pick up what the R number was today. I didn't hear that in the thing or see it on the slides or whatever, but they kept saying it's below one, and it obviously is below one because the numbers are falling, and the death rate's falling, which is obviously a blooming good news. But yeah, so you know, it's just more of the same, really. We're obviously over the peak. We're, you know, gradually, slowly heading towards getting more out of lockdown. But obviously, loads of the economy is still frozen solid, you know. And personally, I think it's bonkers. But hey, that's where we are.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a situation where the number of deaths were going up. You know, globally, it's gone up. People are concerned about what, you know, certain countries have had wave two, and we're not really out of wave one yet. And what I was picking up was the concerns earlier in the week with regards to what's going on in the care homes, and spoken to a few people, and they were saying, you know, essentially twice as many people in the care homes in England, Scotland and Wales have died during the pandemic. So that's above the average of numbers of people that normally would unfortunately pass away during their time in care homes. So there's obviously an issue going on there regarding how well these care homes are being protected and what equipment's going in there. We raised it before about the quality or the quantity of the PPE stuff, but having spoken to some people, one of the issues really is the fact of staff. So in most care homes, you've got some people that are far more able-bodied than others. Yeah, fair enough. And a bit younger, maybe a bit more nimble, agile, etc. And you've got those that are quite poorly. Yeah. And what's
been happening? Like elderly and frail.
Yes, but the ones that have caught quite, you know, bad illnesses, or have got symptoms of COVID, have been some of them. Not all care homes, obviously. People, you need to check this out for yourself. Some care homes are having staff going from one part of the care home to potentially another part of the care home because they're stretched. Are you with me?
Oh, totally.
So therefore, if they're dealing with somebody who's potentially got a COVID symptom, then going back to somebody who's well, obviously you're going to get the cross-contamination there or a potential risk of. Yeah?
It's madness. I mean, just as a slight deviation for that, we'll come back to care homes in a minute, because I've got some interesting numbers on that. Today, my cleaner came round, yeah? And she's got a friend who's 71, who's disabled in some way, I'm not sure. She has been self-isolating the whole time, hasn't seen anybody, you know, but she's incredibly ill. And she is not going to make it. Yeah. I mean, it's just a terrible situation. And my cleaner is really quite upset because it's a really close friend.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turns out she was completely self-isolated. It turns out that it was actually an agency nurse or whatever that came round to her house. To dress, she's got like problems with weeping legs and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And she came around to dress that and gave her the virus.
Oh,
I mean, it's just,
gosh.
You know, it's just appalling.
Pete, the scary thing about that is that agency staff member has probably gone to several homes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, as a person that's working, going in and out of a house for an hour and a half over a course of a couple of days, you could have contaminated dozens of people or he. You know,
it's such a scandal. I mean, I think what really grates with me is that is avoidable. You know, there is no reason for that. And coming back to care homes, I've seen some absolutely horrendous stats on care homes. 10% of the care home population has died of coronavirus.
That is absolutely shocking. Yeah.
Of the daily numbers, so the daily numbers today, well, the total numbers were up to 35 million is what they're sort of saying. I mean, the true death is more like 65. But they're saying 35 million. 40% of those are in care homes. 40%. And that's in the UK, in England and Wales, I think. In Scotland, it's worse. It's 45%. And that was avoidable. What seems to have happened is they actually seeded the homes with people with coronavirus. They kicked them out of NHS places, sent them back to the care homes and seeded the infections in the care homes. Oh. And all this that Matt Hancock comes out with ring fencing and protect, it's just utter lies. And I'm exasperated by the state of the government.
I mean, the situation has been, as you say, compounded because they were wanting to move some of the people out of the particular hospitals to make room for more people coming in. And therefore, one of the things to do was to move them out to care homes. But I think the stats that I saw last regarding the care homes was something around the numbers for England and Wales. So in comparing the average for last year, Pete, of this sort of time, there's 20,000 more deaths recorded in care homes. That's a
20 million.
20,000, Pete, 20,000.
Yeah. No, 20 million.
No. On average. Right. Average for this time of year is increased another 20,000 deaths in care homes up and down the country.
Sorry. I'm looking at another. I've got another figure for you in a minute.
So the concerns around this is that this number hasn't, you know, you're looking at R rates and this, that number isn't slowing down yet because they've not addressed the issues. I mean, we spoke about the last podcast about the care homes getting a VAT thing wiped for 3 months. You know, that's not going to address it because they need more staff, more equipment, and some of these people who have got COVID to be taken out to safeguard the people that are left in the care homes. You know, yeah. And I don't see how that's going to happen, where they're going to put them. You know, we've got these Nightingale hospitals. I've not heard any...
They're closing those down, aren't they?
I've not heard any mention of them being used fully yet.
But they're closing them down.
Why? Why haven't they been utilised yet?
You know, it's just bonkers.
I'll just get to the point where I'm frustrated because, you know, I've said to you before that, you know, it's very polarising, this thing, Pete, and we're back to almost the Brexit debate again. And if you voted for Boris, or you voted for Labour, or you voted for that, therefore you've got to side with Boris regarding what's going on, and Matt Hancock and the Tory party regarding what's going on regarding this COVID strategy. And I don't think you should be a party political person. You should be looking at what's actually going on and judge them on the merit of what's going on. And some of the stuff that's going on, they've done exceptionally well, you know, supporting businesses and all the rest of it. But on this care home bit...
On this care home side of it,
I simply see there's something that could have been dealt with so much better, Pete.
Well, I mean, I'm struggling to find things the government have done well. I mean, okay, perhaps you can say that some of the furloughing stuff and that is good. But the problem with it is the number of people who fall through the cracks. You know, there's something like 4 to 6 million people who have fallen through the cracks. And, you know, people who were changing jobs, people who had a small business, but they've only been doing it a year or so, they don't get anything. And I think it's one of the things that really winds me up is that at the start of the whole fiasco, and there's no other word for it really, apart from cluster begins with an F, and if you watch the thick of it, you'll know what I mean. Mm-hmm. The start of all that, you know, Richie Sunak came on. He's like, I've got your back. Don't worry. You know, you can go into lockdown. You've got nothing to worry about. Reality is there's people all over the country got no income. I just think it's criminal. I'm so exasperated by it. And, you know, I'm no lefty or anything, but I know that when you shut down an economy and you take away people's income, it ain't very good. And I just think it is economic, social, cultural vandalism, basically. And the fact that the Tory government's done it just makes me so angry. As you can probably tell.
I can tell, mate. I've tried not to participate in most of the conversations on Twitter, which is where most people can find me most of the time, on and off during the day. But it is one of those things where, you know, I think some people that are very, very pro the Conservative Party and pro anything that they do, even they are now questioning some of the strategy, some of the ad hoc sort of, today I'm saying this and tomorrow I'm going to say something completely different. And so, yeah, it's going to be one of those things over the next couple of months where some hard truths are going to have to be faced. On a positive note, Pete, the beauty of what's been going on now is that, you know, we've had a slow release of the lockdown with that, you know, stay alert stance that was made last week, and people decided, my interpretation of that is I can do whatever I want. So some people are out and about doing exactly what they want. I go for my walk in the afternoon, and I go for my walk in the evenings now. And in the evenings, the boy racers are racing around in the cars. I'm going, that's not 40 miles an hour. I feel like I'm such an old man, because I can see these cars and bikes going whoosh straight past me, and I'm thinking, they must be doing 60 miles an hour, but there's no police. I'm not sure where all the police are, you know, in Leicestershire. Anyone?
The police have got drones, haven't they? They're up there looking for dog walkers.
Yeah, but the beauty is, Pete,
getting the real criminals.
The economy is opening up slightly. It's opening up slowly. The stock market is getting a bit of it's had a bit of a boost since the lows of March and April. So it's going back up, and some people are undecided. You know, you and I have coined some people as flip floppers. You know, people are, it's all doom and gloom. Oh, it's all bull. It's like, you know, there's no right way to do this. But what,
buy a stock one day, sell it the next.
But what you should do is have a strategy. You know, have a strategy. Think about what you want to do. Plan and think and plan and research. And the markets are going to be, as I said to you before, it's going to ebb, it's going to flow. Decide where you think it's going to go. Some people are saying it's going to get squeezed up because, you know, you've got this going on and that going on. Do your research. Find what it is that you want to buy. And if you're happy to buy it, buy it. Don't need to follow anybody else. Do your own research.
Yeah, and if you're not sure, don't put, you know, the whole position in it. Just put half a position or whatever. Just dip your toe in. You know, you don't have to go mad on the first buy. You know, you can stagger these things. So,
Absolutely, absolutely.
Just a quick email on the R number and stuff, yeah, because that's quite instructive. One of the things we talked about just now was the care homes and the problem there. I remember, I'm pretty sure we talked about this on a podcast, probably last one or the one before, where we were saying there were signs of, in effect, three different epidemics. You had an epidemic in hospitals, you had an epidemic in care homes, and you had an epidemic in the public, in the community. Yeah. And it seems, from what I can tell, that the one in the hospital is starting to come under control, and the R is probably below one in the hospitals, but you'd have to check that if you were obsessed by it. The R in the care homes looks pretty worrying. I'm not sure if that's coming down or what, or if it's just level or whatever it is. But it's interesting, in the actual population, it's really low now. And the stats I saw, this was from about 4 or 5 days ago. And because the numbers are going down, that tells us it's getting better. Yeah. The R for the whole of the UK was 0.6. So that's way below one. And it was made up, there was different areas. So you had London was only 0.4, but the northeast, sort of Newcastle area, was up to 0.8. But all those numbers may have improved since those numbers about 5 or 6 days ago. The other interesting thing on that was that Cambridge University, who did like loads of surveys and research and whatever, they reckon 19 million people have had the virus.
Wow.
That's a third of the population. So if you think about it, right, compared to where we were 3 months ago, right, if you go out now and meet three people, one of those people probably cannot give you it because they probably have immunity. That's an interesting one as well. A lot of people go, oh, will it have, you know, we're not sure it has immunity. Well, from what I'm picking up from pretty much every expert is that a virus of any sort nearly always has some sort of immunity if you've got antibodies because you've had it before. The question is how long that lasts. It's not whether you've got it, it's how long it is, whether it's a year or 2 years or 3 years or whatever. But it does look like if you've had it, then you know, you're probably quite safe for a while.
That's an interesting thing, Pete. What I find a bit, you know, you're throwing me off curve here a little bit, is that you're saying in that is that the in London 0.4,
yeah,
in the northeast
really low.
No, you said 0.8, which is double. And I'm thinking, yeah, in London, far more clustered.
I know.
Far more urban.
I know.
People,
it makes no sense.
People crowded together in various estates and flats and all the rest of it. Obviously, yep, you've got some sprawling estates as well. In the northeast, why is it higher in the northeast? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I suspect there's several reasons, whatever. But remember, London had the biggest problem.
Yes.
So in a way, that might have made people more cautious. So I think there could be a factor there. Okay. One of the other ones for the northeast is that you've probably got poorer populations more closely packed together, and you've got multi-age households and ethnic mix and things like that. So, yeah. But the interesting thing that throws out...
Pete, you have that in London. You have that in London as well.
No, you're right. You're right. It's, I mean, who knows? I mean, it's, you know, it's very in the air. One of the things that was interesting linked to that, and it's linked to what I just said about, you know, if you meet three people, there's only two of them can give it to you.
Yeah.
It's actually a lot more better than that, in the sense that the numbers from Cambridge University across the whole country, so this, you know, this is the average across the whole country, they reckon you would have to meet 400 people to meet one person who now has the infection and can give it to you.
Okay.
The risk is down to 0.24%, and that was 5 days ago, so it will have improved. Okay. So if you're 0.4, it's even better. It's like going to be like 1 in 500 or 1 in 600. Yeah. So you know, we're all worried about it, and it's like, well, actually, the risk now is getting very low, and if we wash our hands and if we're sensible, keep our distance, 2 meters, whatever, you know, we ain't going to have a problem.
Okay, well, let me just touch on this then, Pete, because obviously some countries have tentatively opened up their shops and their restaurants and so on and so forth, okay?
Yeah.
I can't remember what the R number was prior to Germany doing it, but it was low, okay?
Yeah, generally it has to be below one.
Yeah. Their number, after tentatively opening, rose back to 1.1. And then there was something about, was it over the weekend or last week sometime, in Seoul, that they had another outbreak of 170 infections. They've got all the tech and all the rest of it, and they found almost everybody that had been into the bars and the nightclubs and all the rest of it, and, you know, had them all tested like that, because they were checking credit card details and doing all the, using all the cameras and what phones were there and tracking everybody, and got everybody sorted out, which is absolutely phenomenal. I can't see us having that tech or utilizing that sort of technology any time soon if we were able to open up far more than we have done already, and then track people if there was a rise in infection rates again. You know,
it's interesting because Boris is talking about having what do they call it? Test, track, trace. I don't understand that, because I think it should be test, track, isolate. But anyway, so test, track, and trace. They're on about starting that from 1st of June. June, that's like a week away. I know.
And this goes on to my second bit that I didn't want to talk about today.
We've opened some cans of worms.
You know, it's meant to be an investing podcast, and we spend our time talking about Brexit, and then now we're talking about COVID. But Pete, let me just say this. I've got quite a few friends who are teachers and lecturers in universities and so forth, and there's a massive disparity going on now about returning back to university. Because on the one side, you've got nurses and all these key workers, and et cetera, putting their lives at risk to do the good for everybody else. Yeah. And then you've got certain teachers who I know, including some I know, are saying, I don't want to go back. I don't feel that I should put myself at risk. And, you know, maybe one of the children have got it and they can give it to me. And other people saying, I can't wait to go back. You know, this is my vocation. I'm a teacher. I'm a lecturer. I want to go back and teach. You know, then on the other hand, you've got students saying, I don't want to go back. I'm going to defer for this year. I'm going to go back next September. Right. And you know what? I'm going to go back and ask for my money back. So that's going to put even universities and certain, you know, colleges in dire straits if these students go, we want our money back because we're not going to accept this online e-learning, blah, blah, blah. I'm not paying for my tuition fees because I'm not getting taught properly.
Well, yeah.
So all of these things are going on. And at some point or other, we're going to have to decide, because part of the discussion about opening up the schools and certain age groups or all age groups eventually going back is that those people at home have to be at home to look after the child. The child goes back to school, college, whatever, the parent doesn't need to be at home. They can go back to work. Are you with me? So it's that domino effect. So there's a massive, I don't know.
I think we've got a real problem where, and it's partly, you know, it's almost like this wasn't avoidable in a way. It's like the government had to put out fear messages, but it's almost like it's overdone the job. And they, you know, everything seems to be seen through the prism of COVID-19 now, and we're missing the bigger picture. So, for instance, with the schools debate, I mean, I'm exasperated by the schools debate. I mean, what I'm hearing is that the percentage chance of a kid dying of COVID-19 is 0.01%. And that includes kids who have got other health issues, who obviously could be isolated. So I'm hearing that, you know, remember all this talk about kids being super spreaders? Apparently it's nonsense. They're now the experts, the WHO, whatever, are starting to think that actually kids don't spread it at all. And that kids are incredibly resilient. Kids don't actually pick the virus up. And if they do get it, it doesn't hurt them much. And it just seems, you know, it's become this polarised left-right debate, and it's just madness.
It's a difficult one, Pete, and it's not going to get any easier to address. And I think
you can understand why parents are scared. You know,
obviously. I mean, we've been blessed with one child, mate, and you know, the last thing my boss is going to want to happen, my wife to happen, is. Yeah. My daughter goes to school, and then 3 days after she's been in there, she's poorly. That would just send her, you know, in a different sphere that I've probably never seen before, you know. And there's other people who have got, you know, toddlers, you know, and then they've got people that are, you know, children that are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Do they want that child to come back and then give it to their toddler? It's just, It's just a really, really difficult one, Pete. And
it's an awful situation.
Different parts of the world, Italy and so on and so forth, they're trying to, different people are doing different things. And this is what I've been saying to you before. There is no coordinated, let's all think together, almost like a think tank for leaders. Yeah?
Yeah.
Let's all sit around a big table virtually and discuss. What are you doing about schools and colleges? What are you doing about the care homes? Let's all, you know, and all strategize together. So there's the coordinated approach everywhere.
But I'm not even sure they could agree on it. I mean, you know, you look at the tussle we've got into over Brexit again.
But this is a universal thing. It's about this is about humanity, Pete.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? So there's no cost implication for thinking and working together. There's a benefit to us all working together. It's not you against me and the blah blah blah. It's just all sorts something out, and you know, all the scientists should all be speaking together. Or the educators should all be speaking.
Well, yeah, you get the impression that, you know, the scientific community does talk across boundaries and stuff, I think. I think there is a bit of that going on, but it's so difficult. I think there's a lot of cultural issues. I mean, Spain's doing something interesting because the prime minister or the president, whatever he's called, he has basically said, and I thought it's quite an interesting thing, he's actually said, we're coming out of lockdown, we're opening everything up. And he said, the economy is so in a mess that we have to take a bit of risk. You know, you cannot have a risk-free situation. You have to take a bit of risk. And that's what he's doing. And in a way, I'm frustrated that our government doesn't have the guts to do a similar thing. When our government's got a massive majority, it could basically do whatever it wanted. But instead, it's just floundering around like a flappy fish.
I think the thing is, it's the unknown unknowns again. It's this uncertainty. It's the risk.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be the prime minister of the country that is known for essentially a massacre of people, you know, because as the death rates reduce, there's more opportunity to say, you know what, I think we've got past this. So let's open up a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. But if you go too early, too soon, then people are going to be asking a lot of questions for a lot of years, you know.
Yeah, but we come back onto the economic side of things where, you know, it's all right to say, oh, it's human lives. We cannot ignore the mess of the economy, because the problem you've got is, you know, we've spent 10 years trying to sort out the mess from the last crisis. We finally get on top of it nearly, and we're, you know, in a worse situation than we were before. You know, the amount of debt that the country's getting, the fragility we're building into the system. I mean, you know, this idea that we won't have austerity and we won't have tax rises, I just think it's for the birds. I think we're going to have spending cuts and we're going to have tax rises. I just don't see how it's avoidable.
Absolutely spot on. I think the last thing I saw, Pete, was that the government was saying basically Treasury spent $1 trillion in April. Just $1 trillion in April, Pete.
Oh, it just makes you cringe.
It makes you think. It's a massive, massive undertaking, mate. And as you said before, we were only just getting our heads almost above water regarding the last crises. And now we've got another one, which is not a financial one, but it's going to be a financial one. I think there was talk about us heading towards, what's the Bank of England governor called? Andrew Bailey talking about, you know, could turn to negative interest rates, Pete. You know, we've already got, you know, yields across the world, you know, in negative territory, and that's going to go even further. But negative interest rates to us, you know, which means, again, goes back to the investment side of it. You know, what where do people put their money if they can't get any interest rate at all on their savings?
Well, and then we're
back into the market, aren't they, obviously?
We're back into stocks and gold, isn't it? That's really where we are. You know, the only thing that pays any kind of yield, you know, we even lost our dividends because of this crisis. Yep. But the only thing that's, you got even chance of a dividend is from stocks. You know, bonds are just farcical now. And the amount of risk you're taking with bonds, if you're taking like high yield bonds and stuff, I mean, there's a lot of risk there that the company's going to go bust or whatever.
You've got to be very, very mindful as the you know, individual bonds that you're looking at, whether this company's going to be around in the next 2 to 3 to 4 years. But talking about that, Pete, there's a company, talking about an individual company, I'm not sure they've got bonds, I've not looked at it too deeply, but one of the companies that I looked at about a week and a bit ago, And it was a company that used to be an old favourite of all the oil gang and all the other people that are in that sort of sector.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember a company called Lamprell?
Lamprell, L-A-M. Yeah, I absolutely hate the thing because I just think it's a terrible company.
Well, obviously, it's a oil rig assembler / oil services company. And it's been up and down. And, you know, it's been one of them tragic companies that every time it seemed to get a break with oil prices going up, it couldn't even get a break when the prices were going up, if you know what I mean.
But they always struck me as really incompetent. It's like they're supposed to be building oil rigs, and they never seem to be able to do it on time, to budget. Their record is abysmal over the years. I mean, maybe there's a short-term trading opportunity or something, but over the years, it's awful.
This is what I was looking at the other week, and it's one of them. I'm not going to say I missed the boat on it, but it's one of them when I looked at it, and everything I saw was red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, and I went, nah, Pete, not even for a little punt, you know, a little strange. Yeah. Just stay well away from that.
You know, so rather than missing a boat, you dodged a bullet.
Well, I dodged the bullet because I was thinking, nah. So last week, Pete, the shares went down again because it was basically concerns about widening losses, massive write-downs, etc. Everything you could say that was red and negative about this stock was on the board, right? So it was down 9%. Nearly 10% to 9.5p. Okay, so that was last week. So 1 week on, the shares today closed at 20.5p, and today it closed up 76%. Wow. Yeah,
mental, just nuts.
after winning a contract,
they won't be able to deliver it.
you could well be right, but the bizarre thing is, even with that contract, Pete, which I found quite amazing because I had to look at it before we came on this podcast. I had to look at it and I was thinking, okay, it's jumped that much. Let me just see how much that contract's worth then, right? So that came out this morning. And obviously the contract means that it's going to get some revenues and blah, 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 blah. But I'm thinking, okay, let me just read through this. Let me just read through this. Let me just read this. There wasn't anything about the size of that contract, just the name of the people. Right.
So he's jumped a load, and people have like basically made up value.
So Sajan National Oil Corporation has won a contract with it. There's no monetary value given in the actual RNS as to what the value of it is. The schedule works meant to complete in early 2021. Great. It doesn't say what the value is. Yeah, but the share price has gone up 76%.
I'm sure I've heard the name of that oil company, whatever, before, the one that has done the contract with them, like they've won business with that before or something like it. Also, I used to hold LAM years ago, and I swear they were about £1.80 when I had them. And I remember selling out of them, and I think I broke even or lost a little bit or something. But I remember getting out and thinking, my God, what a terrible company! I'm so pleased I've sold it, you know. And it's just been a tale of woe ever since. So I hope people aren't buying it thinking they've got a long-term hold, because I think it would probably be very bad as that.
This is the volatility of the markets, Pete. And, you know, if they can address their underlying financial issues, and as you've possibly put out, you know, and you might be right, you might be wrong, regarding their level of incompetence or get their margins.
Look at the track record.
If they can address their margins, Pete, they might have a hope. But going back to the last crisis, Pete, I've just pulled up a chart here now.
Yeah.
Back to 2008. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell us when you last sold it in a minute.
It was a long time ago. It was probably before that.
2008, the share price was £4.40.
Wow.
Okay. And they had a major hiccup back in 2012.
Yeah.
And there was 86p. And then since then, it's just been drifting and drifting and drifting. And the 52-week low was 7p, which was probably hit last week.
Yeah.
So you've got a multi-billion pound company, at one stage, now currently worth £40 million.
Well, no, you mean it's priced at £40 million. I'm not sure it's priced at
£40 million. Priced at that. You know, so this is the worry when I say to people about, you know, there's buy and hold, right? And there's flip-flopping and there's trading. Yeah.
Yeah.
When something systematically macro fundamentally shifts or changes regarding the well-being and the longevity of a company, get out. There's no point holding on to that stock when you can see this recurring problem with it. Yeah? You might as well have got out at £1 or £2 or whatever, rather than watching it go all the way down in the hope that it'll go up 700 or 800% back to where it was at £2 or £3. It's not going to happen.
Well, there's another clue in the chart as well. You know, I've just said, well, it's got a terrible track record. And I'm talking about the fundamentals, you know, the story over the years. I've just read about it, and it's been a terrible tale of woe. But you've just got to look at the chart. You know, it's pretty obvious it's gone from 400 to 7p. That's a downtrend.
Yeah, you know,
it's not hard to work it out. And it's like, well, if you're seeing a downtrend like that, you've got to say to yourself, there must be something wrong with this company. What is wrong with it? And okay, it might have changed. You know, it might have a new management. There might be something completely different happening that makes it a different situation. It might be worth buying. But 9 times out of 10, if you've got like a 10-year downtrend, you're probably just going to keep going down.
Absolutely. On that note, Pete, one of our listeners that listens every time he goes for a walk, he listens to one of our podcasts, okay?
Oh, mate, must make his walk miserable. Poor chap.
I have been asked to ask you about one of the holdings that you've held for a long time.
I've just got to go, mate.
Which is equally in dire straits and has got a horrible chart. And the question, Pete, to put you on the spot, because I know you don't know that I'm going to be asking you this.
Yeah.
Is why do you still hold?
I'm going to get you back in a minute.
Oh, of course.
I am going to get you back.
Absolutely fine, mate. Why do you still hold French Connection, Pete? And we know the initials before. Well, their brand was FC UK. Why the FC UK do you still hold French Connection?
Yeah, do you know what? It's funny. Where I bought into French Connection many years ago. That's something. What are they now? They're worth nothing now.
I think they're about six pence.
Yeah, I think they were like 80 pence or something at one point. I bought in probably at 60p or 80p or whatever. And they seemed to be going for a period where they sort of doing better. And I thought, okay, this might work out well. And it did all right for a while. Then, of course, it goes bad. And then you look at the assets they've got, you know, the net assets and whatever. And they seem to be a company that 1 minute it puts out a good trading update, then it puts out a bad one, then it puts out a good one, then it puts out a bad one. And I kept thinking, oh, this is going to improve. And it doesn't. And it's going to improve. And it doesn't. And of course, then we get it as the share price falls. It then gets into this is deep value territory. And it's like, this could be a takeover target. So now I'm thinking, right, well, this might get taken over. So I'm not sure I want to bother selling it if it's going to be taken over, you know. And obviously then you get the crisis and all the rest of it, and it ends up at 4p. And I'm thinking, damn, what have I still got there?
So what are the assets sitting there that you think could become a value then, Pete? Is it the brand?
I think the brand itself.
Factories, or what have they got?
Do you know, I think a lot of the problem is the bloke who runs it, you know, Ray Watts, his name. I think it,
Ray,
you know.
What's his name?
Yeah, I think if he was to leave, I think things might, you know, if he was to leave and there was like better management in, I think that would help a lot. But it used to be a good brand. It's an old and tired brand and it's not really been happening. They do a lot of wholesale, you know, they sell wholesale, who then sell on through websites and through department stores and whatever. But it's just been a bit of a nightmare, really. The only positive is I've never really had much money in it. I think the most I ever had in it was like 1.5% of my portfolio. Obviously, it's worth a lot less now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you'll know this already, Pete. Obviously, the chap, the major investor in that and the stakeholder in that is Stephen Marks, who founded French Connection.
Yeah.
And the thing was that when I looked at it since this person spoke to me about it, is that Sports Direct, you know, the infamous Mr. Ashley, also has a stake in that. So is he just waiting for them to roll over to pick him up for pennies in the pound? Or are they going to take it private together?
Who knows?
Is that a possibility?
I really don't know. I mean, I just think, you know, I've got so little in it, I don't really think about it. It sits there in my portfolio and I don't really worry about it.
Okie dokie. All right. Because one of the stocks that I've held for a little while that does a similar sort of thing, Pete, in a sense, it's gone up, it's gone down. You know me, I like my tech stocks, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, we're going back to October now, 2017. Yeah. So we're coming up for 3 years of holding this stock, and the stock that I held with a view to them being almost in every single car by the time we get to 2022, 23, 24. And by that time, the stock price would be probably 4, 5, 6-fold, because that's usually my strategy. You know, if I'm holding this regarding its tech, I've not wasted, you know, 20, 40, 100 hours of research in it. I'm wanting to get that investment in my time back 5, 10, so many fold. And that stock is Seeing Machines, Pete. You've seen
S-E-E.
And that stock has gone.
You know my thoughts on that, don't you?
It's seeing no future. I know what you're going to say about it, mate. So that's a stock that's gone up and down and up and down. And I've trimmed it a couple of times and I've left it there. But every time it seems to be making some progress, something happens, you know. And obviously, you know, with regards to what Tesla are doing and all the electric vehicles are doing, the fleets are doing, they want to get automation in lots of different vehicles, and they want to cut down on the long distance driving, you know, causing accidents. That's where the fatigue technology comes in. But
hello,
are you still there, mate?
Yeah, mate.
They're doing,
I think we just had an accident. I think you just crashed the car, mate.
So whatever they've been doing over the past few years, the share price just simply cannot get out of its own way. Yeah, so that's one of them that I've had for absolute yonks, and it's half the price essentially of where I bought it before, Pete.
Yeah,
and it's simply gone nowhere. And whenever I get these DMs saying, "Why are you still holding this? You're meant to be quite a smart guy."
I know.
What are you still holding this stock for? It's loss making. You know, it's generating revenues. Revenues are going up, or it was the last time I checked. And the operating profits are going down. How does that make any sense? I'm scratching my head going, I don't know how to answer this question, because all of these contracts, it's got contracts in aviation, it's got it in space, you name it, it's got its fingers in everything.
It does loads in mining with Caterpillar, doesn't
it? It's got everything.
Eyeball tracking recognition, so you don't fall asleep and stuff.
Yeah. Everything you could want in a company.
But it does exactly the same as French Connection does, where it puts out a good update, then a bad update, then a good update, then a bad update. And you keep thinking, oh, it's improving, and it doesn't. And it's like, oh, you swines. I hate ones like that. They do my nuts.
Absolutely. So,
mate, I have to ask you a quick question, right?
Go for it.
Right. I mentioned this on Twitter about the last podcast, where I had some health problems. I've got a thing called a suprapubic catheter that I obviously pee out of. That's probably too much detail.
Too much details, Pete.
Towards the end of the last...
Women listeners, mate. Come on. Curb
it. Oh, don't. Feel for the fairer sex. In the last podcast, we probably got to about the halfway point and I realised my catheter tube was blocked. And let's not over dramatise it, but basically, if I hadn't freed it, I could have died. You know what I mean? Let's not be dramatic about it.
Died in the cause of a podcast. That's a new one.
Yeah, exactly. So I start going into this, it's a condition they call dysreflexia, right? I start going dysreflexic. And I am just like thinking, oh God, we got to end this podcast. And I'm watching the minutes and I just couldn't concentrate towards the end. And I couldn't believe when Pete then, I said to Peter during the thing, I said, look, mate, we need to draw this to an end, like as a hint. And he says, oh, we got 3 more stocks to talk about.
So anyway,
mate, we were going to have a safe word. So what's our safe word or safe phrase? So I can say the safe word and then I can get away.
Well, I was going to use the word that you just used and I've already forgotten what it is. I can't pronounce it. So
you can say bring on the gimp.
I think we should throw a curveball to all our listeners globally and just use the word catheter.
Yeah, whenever you use the word catheter, it's like...
No, when you use it, I won't need to use it, mate.
We'll be talking about, you know, a stock. Like, don't they do catheters?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we'll run for that. We'll run for that.
Mate, you talked about LAM earlier.
Yes.
Now, that's interesting, because that ties into another thing, which is good old oil.
Okay.
And I've been saying in my tweets and on my website and in my blogs and whatever, I think oil is going to recover.
Yes.
And I think that will drag a lot of oil stocks up with it. And I think it might drag the FTSE 100 up with it, which is part of the reason I've got a long spread bet on the FTSE 100 at the moment.
Cool.
And that's technically done some interesting things. I think there was a capitulation You know, like this thing that, you know, a sort of like a panic sell-off, a capitulation when the last of the sort of bulls are like, oh, my God, I can't hold this anymore. I've got to sell it. Mm-hmm. I think that happened on that day when WTI went down to, what was it, $38 negative or something. Negative. You had to pay $38 for a day for
the May futures threw a lot of people into the absolute ether, and a lot of margins were called, hedge funds went out of business, and you know, a lot of people were going, oh, and then obviously you had dividend cuts in certain oil companies, which were unexpected. So that was a massive.
Everybody was a bear. Everything you read was oil's bad, oil's going down. And nearly always that's when the market turns.
Absolutely. That's when you've got to put yourself in front of the steamroller and go, you know what, I'm going to pick up that 50 pence in the pound. You know.
And you don't even need to do it exactly then. You can leave it a few days and see what happens. And as it happens, we have plenty of technical signals that told you that that probably was the bottom. You know, and so rather than getting the exact bottom, you're still getting in at a pretty good position. And I always say that's the best way to do it. Looking for a bottom or looking for a top is silly. You know, wait till it's turned and then act. You may miss, you know, the crucial bit. Sorry, you may miss a bit of it, but you'll still get the meat of the move.
Yeah, the thing for me, Pete, obviously I'm slightly different to you in the sense of how I do my analysis of companies, but what I always say to individuals is, if you've done your research on that stock, right, top to bottom, in a sense of knowing the insides of that stock, especially oil and gas, you know what their break-even price is, you know long-term where they've got any hedges and so on and so forth. I'm not the oil guy to go to. There's plenty of other people out there that are far more expert on it than I am. But you know, you've got to know the basics about it all. And then you think, you know what? This is now in a territory where a year out, 2 years out, this company and this price is going to be so much higher than that. I'm happy to buy it now, regardless of where it might go in the next 3 to 6 months, knowing full well that if it goes back to where it should do because oil prices recover, therefore this share price is going to be a bargain in 2 years' time. But people want a bargain for the Monday, for what they can sell it for on the Tuesday, which is what's been happening with quite a lot of stocks. And with certain oil stocks, blue chip or otherwise, you're not going to get that. But on that note, Pete, I already had this story in mind. There's a really, really, it's a kamikaze story, because I suspect that some people are in Siberia as a consequence of this. There's a stock which not many people will be aware of on the stock exchange called Volga Gas, V-O-L-G-A.
Right. All right.
And there's a story. I'm sure this is true because it's in certain papers, and I won't say which.
What's the epic code for that?
I think it's VOG, Pete.
Okay.
Volga. And essentially, one of the NEDs, I think it was, VGAS. It's VGAS.
I was going to say, because VOG is Victoria
Colleges.
VGAS. Yeah. Okay.
So so what happened, Pete, was somebody was pretending to be, this is all allegedly, possibly, right? So it's in a certain paper.
Don't sue us.
Allegedly, Volga Gas spikes, okay? So a WhatsApp message from a fake director was sent to the Russian-focused oil and gas explorer, Volga Gas, right? So this person was basically saying that there are outside advisors to the company. Sensitive information was passed to this person who's posing as to be a company's director, blah, 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 blah. On the 7th of May, Pete, Volga Gas shares, right, were 18 pence per share.
Yeah.
By the 11th, the share price was 34 pence. And it's now back to 24 and a half pence. On the 7th of the 5th of May, the volume was 1,826,000 shares were traded. The previous day, this is what I say to people, always check the volume on these things as well.
Yes. It
always shows you what's going on with certain things. The previous day, the 6th of May, the volume was 159,000 shares traded.
So that like 10 times or more?
Okay. Maybe. Guess what the volume of shares traded today was, Pete?
Barely anything, was it?
1,000 shares.
1,000.
24.5 pence.
Oh, well,
you know, so we're talking about all this stuff that's going on in AIM. We're always talking about the rampers that are up to no good, and the people up to, you know, in their little WhatsApp groups and the cohorts and the the brown paper bag brigade that are getting cash for ramping and promoting POS stocks. It's happening all over the place, Pete, but I'm not sure who's going to deal with this particular situation and how they can trace this person to so it's dealt with. But I suspect the person who was the director or was the person at Volga Gas is no longer going to be with them and probably in Siberia right now. You know? Crazy.
That's absolutely bonkers. Hey, a stock that I think it was either today or yesterday had some news, yeah. I don't hold it. I have held it in the past, and I've got mixed feelings about this stock. I've always sort of, I better tell you what it is. Bango, yeah?
Okay.
BGO.
Yeah.
I don't hold it. I've got mixed feelings because in the past, it's been one of those stocks that sort of promised the earth and never really did it, and you know what they're like. But recently, the last few years or whatever, they've got into this direct carrier billing, yeah, which basically means that a customer with a mobile phone account, yeah, can like buy stuff on their mobile phone and it gets charged to their mobile phone bill. So like I'm with Vodafone, you know, if I was to buy things, then things would get charged to my Vodafone bill and then Vodafone would bill me at the end of the month or whatever, yeah? And basically, BGO make their money by taking a very, very tiny cut of the revenue for stuff being bought over that direct carrier billing. But anyway, they've just announced an agreement with Google for the Play Store so that people can order, can pay for Amazon, pay for Android apps through the Play Store, and BGO get a cut. And that's in, I think it's Asia, Middle East, and somewhere else, I think. Couldn't remember the details on it. But you know, that's the Play Store for Android. 50% of phones, or probably more, are Androids. The potential for that is massive. And okay, they only get like 0.001% of the revenue, but that adds up. And I think it's an interesting play now.
Pete, I was on a, I say exclusive, it was a, I was invited by a VC friend of mine, and Ray Anderson, who founded Bango, was on this was on this seminar.
Wow!
He was speaking about Bango, how he started it, how he grew it, and everything else. And I sat there because, you know, previously you and I held various different mobile payment companies, and most of them got taken over. Yeah. There's not many listed mobile payment companies left on the London Stock Exchange.
Is he still there?
He's still there.
Okay.
He's still there. Whenever you see a video going out talking about Bango and about their results, whether it be on that platform or that platform, it'll be Ray Anderson who is talking. Right?
I thought the name rang a bell. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. So
that was probably the Ray I was talking about at French Connection. Oh, where I got that from.
No. But the beauty of what they've put together now, and in keeping what you're saying about the Android applications, is that they're making and marketing all these apps, Pete. All these apps are out there. They're now monetizing these apps.
Yeah.
You think about the millions of apps that are out there across the world doing a variety of different things.
All the games and stuff.
And they just need a micropayment of a dollar, of a cent, of a whatever, of each one of those, or percentages of those, to be making incrementally more money. I looked at it and I thought, you know, it's a bit pricey. But the share price obviously has moved in the past in the 2 weeks since I looked at it initially. And I didn't have, to be honest with you, I didn't have enough time to research it fully. And you know, as all CEOs, CFOs, and most fund managers are, they're invariably sales persons, men and women, so they want to get you know, involved in the share. But it's, you know, it was at a steal, Pete, at what is it, back in the middle of March, it hit something like I think it was 60 pence. And I wasn't on my radar then, so I wasn't looking at it. And today it went up 10% to £1.56. So that's up 100% and more.
Sorry, how much is it now?
It's 156 today, up 10% today, Pete.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
it's,
that's another.
It's one that Simon Thompson of Investors Chronicle covers.
Ah. Has he covered it recently?
Probably. Right. I would I would imagine he might have written something on his website today, or people often buy in anticipation of the fact that he's going to do something. So because he certainly moves the market. Yeah. I just thought it was an interesting one. Another one that this is actually one I hold, right?
Okay,
Vistry, VTY.
Which used to be called?
Gallifrey, used to be GX. Yeah, sorry, yeah. Used to be, was it Bovis?
Bovis
BVS, or was it BDEV?
Yeah, yeah, then they bought parts of Gallifrey, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, the interesting thing with that one is it came out of a trading update today, and there are quite a few really interesting bits in it, like they sort of gave the impression that sales prices of their houses weren't quite as good as they were getting a few months ago. Yeah, but we're still pretty good, you know, because everyone sort of assumes that house prices would just fall in value. But the implication for what they were saying was that may not be happening. They also said they've got like this partnerships business, right, which is like housing associations and big investors who buy up like a block of property that Vistry build and then they rent it out, you know, residential sort of thing. And yeah, they said they're just getting loads of inquiries, you know, loads of stuff going on. They said that in the private house building, inquiries and website traffic are shot up just recently and is, you know, almost back to the levels it was at before.
I find that remarkable, Pete, because I thought most people were sitting steady now and thinking, you know what, let me just stay at home in my house. I don't want to go and visit someone else's house to look at it, blah, blah, blah. It just seems to go against everything that I think is normal. You know, it's not dissimilar to, I saw something the other week about people wanting to go on Carnival cruises gone up 600%. I'm like, what?
What's that all about?
You know, in August, honestly, Carnival Cruises released some data saying 600% increase for August cruises. I'm going, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But, you know, the housing market's open. People are probably thinking, if there's going to be a financial crash in 2021, 22, let me sell my house. But they're going to buy another house, Pete. So I don't know what, I don't know how that makes any sense.
Well, do you know what? I think it comes back to something we've touched on before, and I've certainly talked about this to friends a lot, is that I think people's lockdowns have been very different experiences. Like, you know, for me personally, apart from the fact I can't go down to a pub, which gets on my nerves, it ain't really been that different for me, really, because I'm quite a sort of like, you know, because of my health conditions and whatever, sitting in the winter, I don't even barely go out of my house in the winter. You know, and okay, I've missed the social side of meeting up with friends and that, but I've still done a bit of that in the sense that I've been to their houses and we're sort of like a mile away, we're shouting at one another from the car kind of thing. But, you know, so for me, it hasn't really massively changed my life. For you, it's probably changed your life in the sense that you're not able to travel to London in the way that you did. But in many ways, it probably hasn't changed your life that much, has it really?
It hasn't changed my life that much, Pete. Obviously, I'm spending more quality time with my two bosses. The 12-year-old is enjoying, or up until today, was enjoying e-learning, and I was trying to help as best as I can with that. But what's happened, Pete, is absolutely bizarre, really, because there's certain people and companies and fund managers that I wanted to speak to, with knocking on doors, sending emails, couldn't really get access to them because they're always in meetings and always flying around the world, or around the country, looking at various companies to invest in. But now, because they can't, travel anywhere, they're coming to seminars, they're picking up the phone, I'm able to speak to them directly, and I've now got this network of individuals that I would only have dreamed of having had the lockdown not come to pass. And I wish it hadn't come to pass and these doors had opened, and it would have, hopefully some of them would have opened eventually. But yeah, I've got access to some people that I wouldn't have had. But what I've noticed is, even with these individuals and the people that are in my network, Pete, what's happening now is that they're getting working from home fatigue. These Zoom calls and these Skype calls and these webinars and seminars and all these online stuff, they're getting to the point where if I do another one of them today, I might just melt down. You know what I mean? So people are wanting to get out of their houses, never mind their gardens, and they want to stretch their legs, and you know, people want to go to the beach. It goes back to this issue of how much do we need to address people going back to normal, and what will be normal going forward. You know, I
well, the thing is, humans are social animals.
Social animals.
You know, you can't get away from that. And it's so important for our mental health that we have that kind of social.
Absolutely. And you may not be aware of it, Pete, but it is Mental Health Awareness Week.
Is it?
Yes, it is. And so my bosses have been doing something about that this week as well.
Yeah.
I'll probably put a tweet out about it later on. But we talked about it back in February, Pete, when we first talked about the COVID stuff. And we talked about, you know, looking at the supply chain was our main issue at the time. And we said this could be bad, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, it could be 10. So look at all your stocks in your portfolio. Some of these stocks will do better. Some of them will do worse, you know. Make sure your portfolio is resilient. Now, some people did, some people didn't. Some people poo-pooed what we said and what we thought. Markets obviously reacted where they did, what they did in March and April, and everybody went sharp and take a breath. And now the markets are back towards 6,000. Everyone's saying that's it, it's over with. We've had a V-shaped recovery, and that's it, it's overdone with. I don't know the answer. I keep getting DMs every day. People that were giving me grief back in March and February and also in April, and now sending me DMs going, oh, you know what, I think you might be right. I'm saying, it's not about me being right, it's about just giving you the heads up to actually think and look at things slightly different, because no one's right until they're right, and that could be 3 months, 6 months,
change.
2 years from
it
now.
It can change, yeah.
You don't know where the market's going to go, you know what I mean? So you don't come to this podcast thinking, oh, Wheely said this or Pete said that, so therefore this is what's going to happen. We're just talking about what we see. You have to go away and do your own research. Yeah,
I mean, it's funny because if you remember, we had a podcast, didn't we? And I as a joke in the podcast said, you know, too many people have fair weather portfolios, you know, portfolios that are made for when the sun is shining. and I said, you know, tomorrow the market could drop 30%. I didn't intend for it to happen, and it nearly did. I mean, oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think next time I hear you say that, I might use the word catheter.
Oh, I don't know if you're allowed to use the word. I don't know if the safe word. I think you have to say, bring out the gimp. I'm sure you've got to say that.
Don't say that word, mate. Come on.
Mate, listen. Back on Vistry, quickly on VTY Vistry. I was trying to make a point that for many people, their experience of lockdown financially has actually been very positive. So, friends, I've got a couple of friends around the corner, right? They've both kept their jobs. They've both been earning good money. They've both been working away. They haven't spent anything. They've been banking the cash. They want to move house. They're going to move house as soon as they can.
Of course, yeah.
So I think, it's, you know, and then as we said, there's other people. You see them on Channel 4 News every night who've lost their jobs.
All right.
All right, mate, got to go. I'll speak to you later. What is it? Universal credit because it's 6 week delay or whatever it is. Yeah, they haven't got a penny to live on, you know. And it's like people's experiences of the crisis are so different.
This is what I touched on before, Pete, and I keep banging on about it, about trying to do as much as we possibly can, you know, in our communities, because there's several issues going on now. You've touched on the mental health side of it. One of the biggest issues, obviously, is loneliness for some of these individuals that live on their own, elderly or young as well. You know, you've got
back to mental health,
21-year-olds. You know, I used to be a social worker, and I used to get young people. You've got 17, 18, 19-year-olds that are living in their own flats on their own. You know what I mean? And so there's all
it's
that
terrible. It's like,
a lot of stuff going on.
It's like troubled kids who are 17, 18, whatever, forced to isolate on their own. I mean, it's just devastating.
So the only contact they're getting right now is with their care, their workers and their people.
That's if they're lucky.
After them.
That's if they're lucky. They're getting
their phones or their laptops. Well, if they're lucky to have that, communicating by phone. You know, if they haven't got a laptop, and speaking to them and trying to support them that way, because you know, social distancing wise, I'm not sure how many social workers are going out into the community to see their young people or their youth workers are seeing them. So they're working from home trying to support them. So it's a massive, massive issue, Pete.
Yeah. It really is. Mate, have we got time? I know we've been talking a while.
Yeah.
Have we got time just to discuss how GDP is made up? It might take like 5 minutes or so.
No. Don't want to do GDP towards the end of this, mate. It's just too,
okay, I'll do how GDP is made up in another
just
podcast.
Just too dull and dull, just too boring. Let's talk
about... Yeah, well, mate, you know me, I'll make it exciting.
I want to talk about. I was asked another question, Pete. I'm going to quickly talk about two.
No stories. Problem, mate.
And this ties in what you were saying about some of the people working from home and some of the issues going on. But one of the stocks we were talking about, COVID-related stocks. And I didn't know this was going to be a COVID-related stock at the time when I purchased it, but it's invariably turned out to be so. So back in October, I bought a stock called Loop Up, ticker symbol
L-O-O-P.
And that is a cloud-based meeting software video conferencing platform. And did my research as usual, saw what was going on elsewhere around the world. More and more people were wanting to work from home. The technology was there, and it was getting better and better and better and better. And at the time, everyone was saying, oh, that's such a shockingly bad company, Pete. What are you doing? You know, how does it compete against its peers? And I said, look, you know, across all these different metrics, it doesn't always come out on top, but in certain metrics, it's fine. Promptly, you know, COVID-19 came up, and the share price absolutely got spanked. Yeah. So
it went down.
It went down. It went down. As all things got sold off. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was one of those stocks, and I thought, you know what, I'm redoing my portfolio. Let me just have a look at what's going on and reconsider what I need to do with this stock. If not, I'm going to have to just hold on. So middle of March, the share price was nearer to 40 pence on the 17th of March.
Yeah.
And obviously then everyone's talking about Zoom. Everyone's doing all these seminars, all these conferences. Now, Zoom is a multi-billion pound company listed in the US. Right. Mm. At the time, Loop was something nearer to, I would say, about 30, 35 million pound market cap. So you can see the difference between that and Zoom. So from 40 pence per share, Pete, obviously all the talk now, work from home, all the different tech. I've had lots of issues with people saying certain things about Zoom and, you know, where is my information going? Has it been hacked? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Zoom shares have carried on going higher. They've fluctuated a little bit, not doing too bad. Loop shares have gone from 40 pence on the 17th of March and are currently £1.28 from my 50 pence, just above 50 pence buying price in October.
Oh, lovely.
So that's one of the winners. Waiting for the next set of results to come out in a little while and to see exactly how much they've grown their US platform, because that's where they need to do the most work. That's where they made made a big investment in the US.
I've really struggled with Loop, and it's back to what you said before about competition. There's two things that really get me about it. First one is competition. The fact that, you know, why would I want to pay Loop when I can, you know, I've got Microsoft Office. Don't I get Microsoft Teams for free? Why would I have Loop?
It's a very, very good point. But
that always puzzled me. And then the other thing about it was they run this model where they have these things called pods.
Yes.
Right? And basically the pods are like little sort of tiny sales teams of maybe four or five people in a pod who sort of sell it to, I mean, that's how I understood it. And I was sort of thinking, well, how does it make enough money to be able to pay these salespeople something meaningful and worth having? I just couldn't get my head around the sort of business model of it. So, I mean, mate, it's flipping brilliant. I hope you continue to do well on it and stuff. But for me personally, I just struggle with that stock.
And a lot of people have, Pete. This is the beauty of sometimes.
Well, that's what a market's about, isn't it? Buyers and sellers. Buyers and sellers, mate.
You know, you've got it's a software as a service, essentially, it's a software as a service provider. And what you need to be looking at is what are the recurring revenues? You talk about Microsoft Teams and Microsoft this, that, and the other. Model is one on recurring revenue, and then add-ons and add-ons and add-ons. So you've got all these add-ons with the Loop Up as well, you know. And if you get the recurring revenue sitting in place, all of a sudden everything else falls into line. So you're giving that away for free and that away for free, but then you've done your premium. Now you're talking about the incremental costs, and you're talking then about the premium products that you want to do certain things with. What's the right price for Loop? I really don't know. You know what I mean? We'll find out by the end of this month. I think it's around the end of May. They should have some annual report, full year results, whatever. And maybe we'll see exactly what they've been doing in America and how much incrementally they've grown, because they're in the sweet spot now that more and more people will not return to work.
Well, this is the ideal time for them,
If they can't make hay now,
they've
absolutely had it, mate. Absolutely had it. The other one I wanted to speak about, Pete, was I've been getting a lot of grief.
Sorry, mate. Can we just do another quickie on Loop?
Yeah, go on.
Last night I noticed, and I hadn't noticed it before,
Google
now offer a free Zoom, Teams, Loop service.
Yeah.
So anyway, carry on.
Well, the competition's there, and it will continue to be there, Pete.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, I mean, let me just find something here. I can find the actual size of Zoom, because it's absolutely massive.
Oh, Zoom's mental. And it loses money as well. I got a feeling that Loop was actually making money, whereas Zoom loses money. I mean, it's just farcical.
Yeah, Loop's making money. Let's have a quick look what the market cap of Zoom is.
Loop put out a warning, though, didn't they?
They did back in February. Yeah. Because the actual thing that they've invested lots of their money in America wasn't quite scaling as fast as they thought it would have done.
And
expectations were dampened.
So it's more of a miss of expectations.
Yeah, that's what happened. So you've got Loop being a £71 million company. You've got Zoom being a £48.45 billion company.
Billion.
I know which one I want to buy, right? Yeah. With a view that it might go up a little bit higher. I'm not going to buy a company for the first time that's valued at $48 billion. You know, which has gone up. I don't know what it's gone up. It's gone up 156% year to date.
On vertical, yeah.
So the last.
Do you have a stock then, mate?
The last one was a stock that I've held for a little while, Pete, and goes back to, I think it's October 2014, and it's one of them again, a technology company which.
You've had that a long time. That's like 6 years. So, yeah, brilliant.
But it's only done what it's done in the past 18 months.
Yeah.
So ITM Power engaged.
In the
business of hydrogen energy solutions. So you've seen it's recently got a deal with Linde for the oxygen and hydrogen and blah blah blah. Yeah. You know, the gases, and it's got a deal recently with Shell to put facilities onto the forecourts.
They use like solar power. So they have like a little facility on a forecourt, and they use solar power to actually crack the water, don't they? And separate the hydrogen from the oxygen. And presumably the hydrogen gets burnt in the car, and the oxygen gets flogged to Lynn.
The water comes out. Yes, mate. It's all good.
So
year to date, Pete, I trimmed it today at £2.41. Having bought it at 23 pence back in October.
Oh, it's a 10 bagger. Brilliant.
So it's year to date. It's up 236%. Right, over 1 year, it's up 683%. So when you do your research and research, sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes, like SCEE, you don't. So when you get it right, and you've got to run the winners as best you possibly can, and then question the reasons why you didn't put more money in the other one. But really, what you should do is focus on the ones that you made a mistake on, learn from that as best you possibly can, and don't try not to make that mistake again.
The thing is, if you've got a massive winner like an ITM, the fact that C hasn't performed doesn't really make that many odds. You know what I mean? Your portfolio will do extremely well simply because ITM's done well and C's lagged a bit.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the beauty of having a portfolio, which I always try and tweak it, Pete, towards the not necessarily the cutting edge, but I'm looking for a sector and I see what's going on.
You like tech. I like tech.
So I see what's going on regarding something that's happening in America or France. Yeah. And people say, how do you find these stocks? I look at what's going on over there and I think, okay, do we have a company like that in the UK that's listed? I know, and Phil Oakley, my dear friend, will absolutely spit feathers. We should diversify. We should hold stocks that are more global. The FTSE and the FTSE All Share is, I think, relatively global. You know, obviously the FTSE 100 more so. But I like to find a stock so I don't have to deal with the FX issues and I don't have to deal with, you know, all these other, I try and buy something. It's cost me 50 quid or 60 quid to buy a stock because it's listed in the US. I don't need that sort of grief that often.
Oh, yeah, it's just... You know,
I'd rather just buy it on FTSE or buy it on the AIM, right? But the tech things, Pete, that I've purchased off the radar that I've done well have been because, and I was explaining this yesterday to someone, because they've got a really good CEO, CFO, right, that they're driven. They've got a long runway of potential growth, or they're at the beginning of something that's really, really going to potentially take off. Some of these things don't happen, like the SCE of the world.
Yeah.
But my 10 baggers at the moment, Pete, are Sky Pharma, which no one will remember now, got bought by Vectra tenfold. Arm Holdings, 1,702%. Vesarion, which...
1,700, that's 17-fold. That's 17
bags.
Brilliant.
Vesarion, which we know has gone up and down and just not delivered as yet. Maybe one day, I don't know. And obviously, I bought Burford way before anyone else was getting involved in all the litigation stuff, because they were just deemed to be an ambulance chaser.
Yeah.
And then Future Shares. Yeah. And obviously, the one that we both hold, AstraZeneca's all the way up there. And I said a while ago, you know, I'm looking for that to be a £100 stock at some point. But the point I'm trying to make is, the beauty of all of this stuff is the amount of time that I spend and you spend on researching stock. That's the only way you know whether your company has the legs, regardless of markets and what's going on in the macro sort of situation. Research your stock, know what the CEO is up to, CFO is up to, what's going on in the underlying fundamentals of that company. Do not follow anyone else on Twitter. Do not jump in because X, Y, and Z's bought it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Do not just buy it because the CEO, CFO did a really good video.
Buying something because someone you know has bought it is just the most dangerous thing you can do.
It's dangerous. You know what I mean? Yeah. So just do
that. And even if you buy stuff that me and Peter buy, I mean, you know, we get stuff wrong. It's madness.
Don't do it. Do your own research. Go away and read some books. Find a stock that you know inside out. And trust your research, because the most satisfying thing about investing is when you've done your own research, you've found a stock, you've put your hard-earned, sweated money into that stock, and it does well. And you can go, I did that. And then you become more and more confident further down the line on something you picked and you found yourself.
Definitely a lot to be said for that, definitely. Mate, we're getting near. We've been here a while.
I'm really sorry for going on again.
That's fine, mate.
Done for a little while.
You know, I wanted to do GDP. everyone will be like desperate to hear.
Oh God! Right, folks, we're gonna call it a day there. I want to say once again, wherever you are in the world, thank you ever so much for following the Twin Peaks podcast. We got the sponsorship deal with SharePad ShareScope because of you, our lovely, brilliant, thoughtful, caring, kind, passionate investors, traders, and followers and listeners of the podcast. So thank you ever so much. We're going to be innovating this podcast and doing a few different things over the course of the months and years as we go forwards. Please stay with us. If it's your first time you're listening, please subscribe and follow us also on Twitter as well, where you can find Peter at Wheelie Dealer and me at Conkers3 on Twitter. Ladies, gents, wherever you are in the world, please stay safe. Think about your neighbours and those in your community. Look after yourselves. Take care. God bless. Thank you, Pete.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
All right, ladies and gents, take care.
Cheers.
God bless. Bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software. For private investors and traders, visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.